The following is an interview tape with Mr. Stanley G. Marshall, Sr. in Bruny, Texas, on July 31, 1975, by F. Michael Black for the Oral History Collection of Texas A&I University at Kingsville, Texas.
I'm Stanley G. Marshall, Sr., Box 205, Bruny, Texas.
Mr. Marshall, where were you originally from?
England, Llano County, Texas.
How long have you lived in South Texas?
November 1904.
And where did you come originally when you moved to South Texas?
Heavenville.
Mr. Marshall, what is your occupation?
Well, presently I'm in the ranching business.
How did you get started in ranching?
Well, my brother and I, in childhood, got a few head of cattle and been at it all my life.
Could you identify your brother for us?
Ty T. Marshall.
And you say you started out by owning a few head of cattle and some land. In what counties do you presently own land, Mr. Marshall?
Brooks, Jim Hogg, Webb, and Butler.
Approximately how much land do you have in for ranch land at the present time?
My son and I are ranching on 12,000 acres, but we have other places where he's got other ranches, two ranches in Butler County, and some odd sections in Brooks.
How many head of cattle do you have?
Around 500 cows.
And what type of cattle do you have on your ranch?
Well, they are mostly Santa Gertrude cows. And we have Hereford and Charlie bulls.
Mr. Marshall, would you describe this country as you can first remember seeing it when you arrived here?
Well, it was more open. The mesquite has taken over a good part of the patches, and even though the many ranchmen have worked on brush eradication, it comes back about as fast as they get rid of it.
So the land has really changed since you first came here.
It's especially this time the country is getting heavier all the time. What was used to be in places blow sand is now quit blowing. The vegetation has covered the ground so it doesn't blow hardly anymore. For instance, in Brooks County, down below California, I remember when the state and county didn't charge any taxes. They said it was worthless, and it now is covered with live oak trees.
So there's really been a change in the
vegetation trees.
Since you are a rancher, Mr. Marshall, could you tell us a little bit about the cattle industry in this area and its importance as far as the ranching section of the state of Texas?
Well, at one time, Heavenville was the largest cattle shipping country off of the pasture, the market in the world, in the United States, okay. But today, have auctions, barns all over the country, and most of the cattle are sold through auction barns, and for some of the larger ranchmen get to San Antonio and Fort Worth, but most of them are sold locally.
Most of the local ranchers have some kind of interest in the local auction barn?
Well, I guess when in Evansville they do, I suppose they do in other places. I think that's the object of those who put up these auction barns, is to get tie the ranchmen into it and get them interested so they'll support it. However, there are some that are, they have no, they're owned by individuals, I'm sure.
Privately owned. Something that's used a lot in this country now is a trap gate. Could you tell us about how a trap gate is used and why its use came about originally?
Well, first they used to use the trap gate to trap wild cattle in. And but now they, since there's very few cowboys, the men of ranching have gone to tracking the cattle instead of riding them on horseback.
Could you describe the actual trap gate itself and how it's used at roundup time?
Well, there's two gates, the in-going and outgoing gate, and if you want to catch the cattle in the catch stand, you close the outgoing gate, and the cattle come in through the in-going gate, and you can't return, you can't get out. And we usually close our trap gates Sunday along about noon or soon after, and by Tuesday morning we have, unless there's water out or something like that, well, we have usually 98% of our cattle by Tuesday morning.
So the catch dates are quite efficient.
Yes, they're efficient.
Yeah. Many people are using catch gates for just catching animals from time to time, and you were one of the first people to use them for ingoing and outgoing cattle, isn't that right, Mr. Marshall?
Yes, as far as I know, some ranchmen had used them to catch your cattle, but not in the sense that I do. They would just catch one or two wild animals or mean animals that they couldn't get otherwise. They would try to catch them with these trap gates, crudely made, but I specialized and made more expensive gates, and I use them for catching cattle, for gathering cattle, or for any time I want to catch cattle, I close my gates. And if the weather's permissible, no water out, well, of course we have to fence in most of our water. In fact, we have during rainy season, we put up electric fences, and so they can't drink the water out in the lagoons and low places where water gathers. And,
in other words, you use the trap gates year round, day to day, and you train your cattle from birth.
Yes,
and
calves we train them. You see a little calf, week old, will come along running and run right through the trap gate, or right into the pen. They learn very easily. Once in a while, there's about one out of 100 that doesn't learn to use them very well, but otherwise we have very little trouble with them.
You told us about your trap gate system of catching animals. How often do you and your son have to go out in the pasture on horseback and round up stray animals?
We have no horses. We have no saddles. So we never go out horseback. We go out sometime in the pickup. And sometimes the animals, especially young calves, don't come in, and we heard them through the gates.
So it is possible to ranch in this country without owning a horse?
Yes, it is. We've been at it now for 15 years or more.
Without horses?
Yes, without horses.
Something that cattle ranches are known for is branding their cattle. Could you tell us how and why cattle are branded, and then tell us about your system of earmarking cattle?
Well, they're branded so you can declare your ownership, and most ranchmen, practically all ranchmen, they are marked because you can see if you ride out in the pasture, an animal will look at you, and you can see the earmark. Whereas it's hard to see the band sometimes. Most people band on the left side. Sometimes you can see just the head or the right side, and bands are hard to see at the distance too. When the hair gets long, and earmarks, you can detect them from a great distance.
What is your brand, Mr. Marshall?
VT.
VT.
We originally made it. We called it Roman 5, but everybody else called it VT, so we settled down on VT.
Besides, you like VT, yeah. So you stuck with it. In this country, whenever grass becomes scarce, we hear people say they're going to go out and burn pear. Could you tell us how pear burning first came about and the effect that and how it has helped ranchers through the years?
Well, the first pear burner was manufactured by Pearsall, Texas. And they used gasoline. They had a tank that hold about 2.5 gallons of gasoline, and then put about 2 gallons of gasoline in 2.5 gallon tank and pumped it up with air with a automobile. One of these pumps that you bump our tires up with, and then it had a coil that heated, and you would generate, get your coil hot, and then open up a valve and let it throw a flame and burn the fines off the cactus. Yes, it's in this way a lot of cattle has been saved from starving to death by burning pear. But now the shortage of hands and the high cost, some are making machines with several pear burners on them. But we've been using mostly the liquid protein to feed cutting shop feeders. Or it's an oil-based protein feed, molasses.
What were some of the problems caused by pear burning?
Well, the main problem is you let your cattle get too in the pen, and there's no amount of dry forage that the cattle tend to scour, and it usually pays to feed some hay along with them if the effect is against scour. And you feed them all the pear they'll eat, and they're about a pound and a half of protein, a cottonseed cake, something on that order, and keep the cattle in good shape.
Besides causing problems for the cattle, did pear burning present any other problems to the rancher?
No, not that I know of. As long as there was plenty of help, we got along easily. Got along fine with it. Feeding cattle with the pair of bunnies.
Something that's come into this country, I suppose, in recent years, I may be wrong, is buffle grass.
Yes.
What can you tell us about buffle grass?
Well, buffle grass is native grass of Africa, and it's brought over here, and it does especially well in the blue escarpment in the rough, rocky land. It doesn't hard to get up and doesn't do so well on the border land, this land above the escarpment. The only thing about it, it doesn't stand very much cool weather. It stands drought well, but it doesn't stand very little cool weather. And what we really need in this section of the country is a grass that will stand more cold weather, because usually during the winter that we are short of feed the cattle. There are several kinds of grass to say that can be the cold weather better. And I haven't tried them out very well.
Buffle grass seems to be the popular
grass
in this area.
Yes, it's cattle like it, and the only thing, you have to be careful not to overgraze it. If you want to have it, control it. Have it fence the buffle grass field, or patch it fenced in, and take the cattle off it. It gets too short, because you can fill it, they'll fill it out. Especially if you have to meet it down too low in the wintertime.
We've talked about buffle grass, and earlier you said that people had to resort to brush control in this country because of the number of mesquite trees and this sort of thing. What methods are used by ranchers to improve their ranch lands?
So if they can, we've tried everything. We've tried chemical spraying with airplanes and root lines, and chopping, but it's about the time you get your money back and the cost of it, but it's the brush is back, so it's about a break-even business, apparently. Now the cost of chemical, which is, it runs up $10 a gallon, you can't hardly afford to spray it anymore. And something about this spraying of brush that they haven't found out. One time you get a good kill, and next time you, under the same conditions, apparently, you don't get any very small kill, or top kill over the leaves. You kill very little brush.
How successful is root plowing?
Well, it's holds your brush back for, it'll return in about 12, 15 years.
That's if you don't do anything at all?
Yeah.
Two of the largest enemies of the cattleman in South Texas are the fever tick and the screw worm. Can you tell us what has been done to help rid the rancher of these two pests?
Well, we've got rid of the fever tick by dipping in arsenic, a dip made of arsenic, and only unless it's reinfected in Mexico, we have no trouble with fever tick anymore. Unless it's along the river, and some cattle are moved in, I guess. I think some outbreaks in Bennett County. Somebody hauled some Mexico cattle in. And the screwworm, they had totally eradicated screwworms in this country for a good many years. And then they decided to go down to Mexico and start that good naval policy down there and get rid of the ticks down there, and couldn't make enough tail flies for both projects. And we bothered a good lot with screwworms again. And ear ticks, yeah. Ear ticks have made their appearance again the last few years. And we have to spray with Coral, keep the ear ticks down.
We talked about the cattle industry and how you got started and how it's changed. And speaking of change, I've heard you talk about in the early days of living on the ranch, you engaged in some crop production. What type of crops did you have?
Yes, we used to farm, my brother and I used to farm 400 or 500 acres every year. We raised cotton, and we planted beans, pinto beans. We shipped them out by the carload lot. We had a thrasher and thrashed out the beans and bought new bean sacks, packed them up, sold them to local merchants and wholesale houses and later, and shipped them out by the carload lot. But actually, this is no farming country. We're just about above even that.
When you and your brother started out, what year exactly did you really pick up in the cattle business? Do you remember? Was it before the oil boom?
Before the First World War. We had another herd of cattle that we figured was going to be drafted, so we sold them. We were living in Sweden and Duval County, and by Benavides. And we sold out these cattle to Frank Clark and Ray Lucas. And we moved to Evansville because we moved our mother and father to Evansville because we'd be drafted. And the flu broke out before we were drafted. Although I volunteered for the Navy, they didn't call me. I had my name on the waiting list down in Corpus for a year or more. And we got started back in the cattle business again in 1920.
About 1921-22, the oil boom began in this area. What type of effect, if any, did that boom have on the cattle industry and your ranching venture?
Well, I tell you, if it hadn't been for the oil boom in this country, most of the ranching has been broken during the King Ranch. One time there were financially, I suppose it was possibly when both of them and so on. And it has helped all the landowners in that they've got bonuses and rentals, and those who didn't get oil got bonuses and rentals, which helped pay the tax. And my brother and I invested in raws and mineral leaves, and the land we bought it in places where we thought there might be oil and scattered around, and we paid the trend, mostly not the oil trend, to the coastline trend, if you could call it, and we did it very fortunately, as if we were fortunate, and we got oil, we got production on the many places, and it helped us out.
So your cattle and business interests have grown along with the oil industry in this area.
Yes, its presence is nothing. The person can, its present price. We sell cattle for and we have to pay for the hand and everything you buy, you use on the ranch, you barely break even.
Mr. Marshall, this section of the state is known for its white-tailed deer.
Yes.
How has the deer helped the rancher in this section of the state?
Well, nearly all the ranch country is leased now, practically all of it. I know that the welders are leasing theirs. That's $3 an acre for their land in Denver County and some other counties. And we are leasing ours for the first time. We are land leasing from $1 to $3.5 an acre for deer and quail. And
is that combined or separate leases?
When they take the deer and quail both,
it goes for about $3.
Of course, you have to have a bunkhouse or something for them to stay in, you know. You have to have a camp to get that best price.
Mm-hmm. But this has been a source of income for the rancher.
It's a source of income. It's actually more than you're making off the cattle. You're not making $3 an acre off the cattle under the present condition.
We've talked about the ranching industry and the cost and all the improvements that it takes to operate a ranch. In closing, Mr. Marshall, could you give us a sort of a summary of what you think the outlook for the cattle ranching industry in South Texas will be for the next few years?
Well, that'd be hard to tell. The thing is overproduction of cattle. There's too many cattle on there. And they looks pretty bad to me. I don't see any chance in this condition change. Unless the market goes up, you can't raise cattle as for $125 anymore. And we were getting over $200 for them over a year ago. And these people that have paid these high lease prices, high pasture prices, borrowing money on the cattle, paying interest on the money that they buy the cattle with, and paying high leases, they just don't care. They're going to all go broke sooner or later.
What is the, at the present date, what is the approximate cost of a cow or a calf? Or
well, a good cow and a calf, which there's not that many being sold on auction. Everybody's trying to hold the breeding stock. They would go up to get the calf in the size would be approximately $300. But there's not that many selling at that price because they're not that quality. Not selling that quality of product. They call it calling out the cows, yes. And the breeding stocks are cutting them out. That natural process that goes on all the time. But they're averaging about $250 now. Yeah, a good cow and a calf.
Is there anything that you'd like to add to what you told us about the cattle ranching industry, Mr. Marshall?
I don't know of anything. I know it's a hard road to hoe.
It's not the glamour and the romance that people seem to think that it is.
No, it's not.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Marshall.
No.